working today. What the heck?
You know, Eric, as it turns out, the Treasury Department has kind of given me a homework assignment. Oh. I have some comments due to them on the 45Z tax credit Monday. And so I'm kind of cramming, working on that and getting ready to, you know, write those and turn those in.
That's pretty awesome to be asked, is it not? I think that's a big deal.
Well, let me clarify. It's not special that it's a public comment period, okay. So anyone can weigh in.
Oh, you know. They didn't call you up specifically and say, Brian, would you mind telling us what you think?
Unfortunately, they did not. They ought to, but they didn't.
Well, we do have some good news on the horizon, and the ethanol industry, I think, is moving forward, although it's been moving forward without Washington a little bit in recent years, but despite Washington. But I think we're finally making some headway, and I guess maybe the biggest news came, what was it, last week during the National Ag Day celebration, President Trump and Secretary Rollins, and we finally got the EPA's RVOs, that final announcement we've been waiting for months. Is that right, for 26, 27?
Yeah, you hit it on the head. It was last Friday, so it was a week ago today during that White House agriculture celebration. And among the many announcements that were made at the White House that day, I think for the ethanol industry and renewable fuels more broadly, the big one by far was these renewable fuel standard volumes, as you indicate, for this calendar year and next year. There's been much anticipation around the timing and the substance of this, and it is going to be the largest blending volumes ever set by EPA under the RFS. There are very, very significant increases for what is considered advanced biofuel under the RFS program. And for your listeners, that would be biodiesel, renewable diesel, corn oil from ethanol facilities that's used as a feedstock to produce biodiesel would sort of help qualify under that advanced biofuel bucket. But very big increases. USDA thinks that this could inject another $3 to $4 billion into the economy. So that's a big benefit if it does come to fruition. And then probably the other issue that we were really working hard on, Eric, was this issue of the small refinery exemptions, the gallons that those small refineries don't have to blend because they get some sort of a hardship waiver from compliance with the RFS. How was EPA going to handle that? They wanted comment from all the stakeholders on how to do it. They said maybe we'd reallocate half of those gallons or all of those gallons or something in between. And again, for your listeners, the idea of reallocation is if you and I are refiners and you get a waiver from EPA that you don't have to blend ethanol or biodiesel with your petroleum products, the way the program's supposed to work is that I would pick up the slack. That ethanol, that biodiesel that you were supposed to blend, I would then have to blend to make sure that the overall blending volumes remain whole. We wanted all of that volume reallocated. The refiners wanted essentially none of that volume reallocated. And EPA did a pretty nice job. They're going to reallocate 70% of that. So that's much closer to what we wanted than, you know, some in the refining sector. And so overall, you got to look at this and say, this is maybe the most significant and most positive RFS announcement that we've ever had.
Yeah. Were you surprised at the big jump, though, in the RVOs?
I was a bit, and I think everyone was a bit. And it's really going to require, and the big jump is really for biodiesel and renewable diesel. And it's going to require everyone that, you know, built these crush facilities, and I know some have been built in the Dakotas and Minnesota and certainly states south of the Dakotas, but it's going to require those facilities to ramp up. I think I read that it's going to require a 60% increase in the production of advanced biofuel from what we've seen previously. And so EPA is sort of calling, you know, not calling a bluff, but putting a challenge on the table to the folks in that sector that you've told us you want much higher volumes. Yeah. We looked at the statute and we agree with you. That's what the RFS calls for. Now, you know, we're going to have to produce that.
I'm surprised there was no blowback from the oil side. You know, the big increases.
Oh, there was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The refining groups kind of came unglued, to be honest with you. And, you know, part of that's to be expected, I suppose, because that's sort of the position that they've taken. Unfortunately, you know, we've had this RFS program for 20 years, and a lot of the individual refiners have figured out how to comply with the law, as they should, over the course of two decades. But their trade associations still, if left to their own devices, would like to see the RFS go away. And that kind of talks about why we have this program in the first place, and the fact that the renewable fuel sector relies on our competitor to blend our product and send it down the supply chain to retailers and ultimately consumers. And left to their own devices, they don't want to blend more of our product. And so that's why you have an RFS, to sort of level the playing field, to make the market more fair and more competitive for an alternative fuel that's cleaner, that's cheaper, that's American made. And so you're gonna have resistance from those who want the status quo to remain. But overall, I think individual refiners are gonna find a way to make this work. And the other thing that ought to be pointed out is that a lot of the renewable diesel that's produced that qualifies under the RFS today is produced by oil refiners. They're using fats or oils or greases, waste products, essentially, and they're refining those products into renewable diesel. And so they can qualify toward the RFS and generate credits for producing those fuels. And that's helped sort of cushion, I think, some of the resistance from refiners over time.
I have to ask you this question. Recently, you know, the EPA announced that it was going to do the emergency fuel waiver again this summer to allow the sale of E15 during the summer driving season. And I thought, oh, great. Okay, we're set at least for another year until we get year-round E15 passed. And then I forget who it was, but then somebody told me, well, it's only actually for a couple weeks. Is that right? It's not for the full summer?
It will end up being for the full summer, but it is true that the Clean Air Act authority that EPA invokes to grant these emergency waivers is really only good for a 20-day period at a time. And so the last 4 years, now it will be 5 years. This will be the fifth consecutive summer, 2026 will be, that either the Biden administration or the Trump administration has issued these emergency waivers under the Clean Air Act to allow E15 in all parts of the country, particularly during the summer months of what's considered to be June 1st to September 15th. But the statute says those waivers are only good for 20 days at a time. So what EPA has done is simply renewed those waivers, and so they are uninterrupted, and they'll continue to renew them this year as they have in the past. So we're going to be fine, but technically it is true that waivers are temporary in nature and last for 20 days, and so they have to sort of renew them.
Okay. I either forgot that or just never really heard him talk about it specifically before, because I'm like, who the heck? A lot's just for 20 days. They gave me the dates. I was like, what the heck is that going to accomplish?
It doesn't help anyone.
It totally makes sense. All right. Before I run out of time here, Brian, and I appreciate you hopping on Good Friday here, but you guys had your big, not just one day, I think you had several days, but you had a fly-in in Washington, D.C. Any news or any comments or anything you want to let us know on what happened?
Yeah, Mother Nature didn't cooperate for a lot of our folks, especially from the Dakotas and Minnesota that tried to fly out given some of the weather problems. But we still had a good showing. We had about 100 meetings with members of Congress. we met with EPA and we said, hey, Congress doesn't look like they're going to be getting E15 legislation done soon, so we need an emergency waiver. And what do you know, a week later they issued one. So I'm going to give our folks credit for helping push that forward. And we just continue to, you know, beat the drum primarily, Eric, on the need for bipartisan legislation in Congress to finally get over the finish line for E15. It's something you and I have talked about for literally years now. And I think we're inching closer. Whether it happens early this year or late this year, I don't know. But I think we're going to get there.
Do you think that, because the E15, once they finally pass it, I firmly believe it's going to get done. I just don't know how it's going to get done. But do you think it might be a part of the new farm bill if that ever gets passed?
It's a possibility. In fact, a lot of members of Congress we met with in March during our fly-in had singled that out, the farm bill, as a way to do it. The agriculture committees don't have jurisdiction over E15. Those are sort of more environmental or energy committees. So they're not allowed to do E15 in the agriculture committees, but you could see it as maybe an amendment on the floor of the House or the Senate for the farm bill, or during a conference committee process where the House and Senate iron out the differences between their two farm bills. That's a possibility. I think the greater likelihood, Eric, on how E15 gets done, is that the Trump administration is going to send a spending request up to Capitol Hill to help pay for the war in the Middle East, the war with Iran. And so that is probably going to be what's considered a must-pass bill. And a lot more of the members of Congress we were talking to have pinpointed or targeted that. War spending supplemental is what they call it, a wartime spending supplemental, as a way for us to tack E15 language onto that must-pass bill. And if that happened, I think it's sooner. I think that's more in the next month or two that might happen. Yeah. If E15 were to move as part of the farm bill, I think that's later in the year, maybe even in the lame duck situation. So those are sort of the timelines and a couple of potential ways to get this done.
Well, I don't know if this was on your radar, but I'm just going to mention it because it was big news here. Gevo, which you probably know in the renewable fuel ethanol industry, purchased the former Red Trail Energy ethanol plant in Richardton, North Dakota, and announced recently they're going to double the production, adding another 75 million gallons per year of low-carbon ethanol. That's got to be good news, I would think, right?
It's huge news, and you're going to see the leading low-carbon ethanol producers, because of this new 45Z tax credit, that if your carbon score goes under 50 kilograms of CO2, you can get a pretty nice credit. The Clean Fuel Production Tax Credit is what it's called, that Congress enacted. You're going to see those companies that have a low carbon score get a larger tax credit, and they're going to do something with it, and most of them are going to look at expanding their production. And so that's precisely what Gevo is looking at, as probably one of the lowest carbon producers of ethanol in the country, to be honest with you. So yes, it's very positive, because it's going to create jobs for the construction. It's going to create more demand for corn for farmers, and so it's all around positive news indeed.
I need to correct myself. The plan is to upgrade to 75 million gallons per year. They already are doing around 60 to 7 or 65 to in that range. So they're going to be up to or hope to get to 75 million gallons. I wonder if that's in relation, though, to getting E15 year round passed, or if they're just going to do it.
You're right, Eric. That's definitely another factor. There's anticipation that we're so close, we're finally getting there. That will increase demand eventually for ethanol by the tune of 6 to 7 billion gallons nationwide. It's not going to happen in the short term. That's when E15 is sort of the nationwide standard. But that's another thing on the radar for these companies, you're right, in terms of looking to meet that demand in the future.
And with the war with Iran, it sure proves again at the fuel pump that there's a place for ethanol, because regular fuel prices and diesel, good thing we got an alternative. Ethanol.
Out of this world how high prices are, and ethanol prices are up too, but they're trading at a full dollar under gasoline, and so blending more ethanol into gasoline is going to help insulate us from these price extremes. You're right.
All right, very good. Brian, thank you so much for joining us today, and hopefully maybe the next time we talk to you, we'll be talking about the passing of year-round E15. How about that?
I would like that, Eric, very much.
All right, sounds good. Thank you. Have a great weekend, sir. Appreciate it.
You